Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Tom Palladino, and we are going to be talking today about scalar energy. Tom has a website with a lot of great information on it. I would like to give that information out now. Tom, can you give your website and contact information?
Sure, by all means. Thank you, Doctor. My website is www.selfhealgo.com. And on my website, I explain my scalar energy research and how I offer scalar energy to the general public for health reasons.
Well, thank you very much. I developed an interest in scalar energy because of my friend who was involved with scalar energy, and I basically started studying this with Peter Kelly. Peter was the founder of the Betar machine, and when I went up to his house up in Rabun County, he would have a whole bunch of books on scalar energy, and Peter explained to me that scalar energy is the basis of healing. Like when you put your two hands together in front of you, it creates a standing wave that is actually what scalar energy is. And so that prompted me to go investigate a little bit further in terms of the physics. And what I ended up doing was studying the work of Colonel Tom Bearden, and we had talked a little bit earlier, and you said that you were familiar with Tom Bearden's work. Tom's website is quite interesting to read. It's a little bit technical and with a lot of mathematics, but I came across an interpretation of his work that was a lot easier to understand. And basically, I want to read this for the audience and see what you say about it, Tom. Basically, Bearden's summary of electrogravity is when light waves converge from opposite directions along each of three different axes, so the opposing light waves along each axis cancel each other out, they bleed into something called electrogravity, which is kind of an artificial gravity. And they go on to say that physicists Lawrence Ford and Thomas Roman wrote an article in Scientific American in January of 2000 on this negative energy. Basically, in this article, the scientists converged lasers in an airless vacuum, which caused a squeeze state fluctuation in the vacuum of space-time. And these are places where light waves cancel out and squeeze or compress space-time. So such fluctuations create a negative energy, places where energy level is actually less than zero. And Bearden says that in these places, it bleeds into an extra dimension as kind of an artificial gravity. And Bearden also says if you converge and cancel out electrogravity, it bleeds back into electromagnetism as light waves. And there's a relationship between these electromagnetism and electrogravity is reciprocal. So when one goes up, the other goes down. And so I think it's important when we're talking about scalar energy to actually understand not only how it relates to the physics, and you have to have an expanded understanding with multidimensional formulas to understand this physics. It's not a physics that's limited to three dimensions. And basically, what Bearden was saying is that if there is unregulated use of electrogravity, it causes a change in delta T, which is a change in time. So although what we're doing in healing is not likely to do that, A lot of people have asked, you know, why don't we use this for energy? And the answer is probably because we would actually change time as we know it. And that would be something that, might cause like something like the sun to burn out sooner than it should, those types of things. So that's kind of what I was able to glean from these writings, Tom Bearden and the Scientific America articles, that this is very, very real. It does require one to have an expanded understanding of physics, much with like the superstring theory, quantum theory combined, to understand that these effects occur outside space-time and yet change space-time. In other words, delta T, the change in time, is sped up by irresponsible use of electrogravity. So I just wanted to throw that out as a beginning thing if the listening audience wanted to look those things up. The references are on the internet. I just printed them out as I was trying to understand scalar energy, which is what I've tried to do for a long time. Would you like to introduce us to your understanding of scalar energy? I understand you're using it for a number of different things in terms of helping people with health challenges.
Sure. Thank you, first of all, for your invitation, Doctor. Yes, I work with a scalar energy instrument. It is interesting, and this correlates, Doctor, to what you elucidated upon. Scalar energy and the electromagnetic spectrum are closely related. It's my belief that the stars of our universe, our sun of our solar system, and the stars are the points of origin for scalar energy. Now, scalar energy is a double helix. It's not a particle. Scalar energy is a waveform. It propagates out as a double helix. And if we were to define that helix, it really assumes the properties of phi, P-H-I. That approximates to 1.618. Now, that model, that mathematical model, is incorporated into every standing wave. All scalar waves have that paradigm about them. Through my research, I have uncovered, and I actually learned this initially from a researcher by the name of Galen Hieronymus and his wife, Sarah. Scalar energy can be converted into electricity and vice versa. And this is really profound. We have two separate energies. They are closely related. Again, it is bidirectional. Both energies can be converted into the other. But it is my contention you either have a standing scalar wave or you have the electromagnetic spectrum. The two do not coexist. Now, it occurs to me that the sun of our solar system, again, and the stars are the points of origin of all energy, of all light. It's my contention that everything in the universe begins initially as scalar energy. And in some paradigms, and this world is one of them, some paradigms we see a great deal of what electromagnetic energy. We see that other energy manifests itself. All of this lends itself to, once again, the notion that Tesla had and that Galen Hieronymus had, that scalar energy is all around us. We simply have to tap into it.
Now, I have one question. I'm a little confused about what now. Electromagnetic energy we know propagates through the universe at the speed of light, but what about scalar energy? Does it really propagate through space-time, or is it taking another route? Because it seems to me when you're using scalar energy in healing, its effects are instantaneous.
Yes, and it is, and that's appropriate. It's capable of instantaneous communication, and the only way that could be afforded is that this standing scalar wave pre-exists. In other words, let's take a distant star, Alpha Centauri, and that star would automatically have this pre-existing connection with the Earth. In order to have instantaneous connection, you really cannot you have to discount speed because speed is the time dilation between point A and point B. We're not speaking about the speed of an object. If something is instantaneous, then there cannot really be a point A and a point B. There can only be unity. Yeah. So as you said, and I think that's very salient, Doctor, it's expedient to understand that this energy in many paradigms pre-exists. In other words, our universe is indeed a matrix, and scalar energy is that connection, that concatenation between all objects.
Now, on your website, it said that you spent a lot of time in Conyers, and there were examples in Conyers of during the time Mary was manifesting. One of my friends here is a neurologist who actually wrote a book on these phenomena, Dr. Raymond Sanchez. So I've talked to him for a lot, a lot of discussions about what was going on, and it's his opinion. And he actually measured this at the Conyers site, that it was this energy that came through things like pictures. It manifested in a way where this I believe it was scalar energy coming through, the light energy that would manifest, and there would be a huge amount of spontaneous healings when this energy manifested. Would you like to comment on that? Because that kind of, we just had this discussion about the scientific basis of scalar energy, and then here we have the phenomena of this light energy in Conyers and other, Conyers isn't the only place, but it's the one I'm most familiar with because it's right down the road from Atlanta. And I have had multiple witnesses of this energy tell me about it and tell me what it was like.
I would concur, and I think that's rather insightful on your part. Yes, I did attend a number of apparitions of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Conyers, Georgia. That's a suburb of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I observed myself specific light phenomenon that were outside of the realm, that were not normal. I would say that those manifestations that I saw were scalar light manifestations.
Right.
In my opinion, God would prefer to work with scalar energy on account of the fact that it is an internal light source. Electricity mm-hmm. experiences entropy. Scalar energy does not experience entropy, meaning it mm-hmm. will not weaken. It is an internal energy. Now, if you're God and if you're the all-knowing and all-powerful creator of the universe, I would presume he would prefer to work with a light source that is likewise eternal and perfect.
Right.
Electricity is not eternal. Electricity, as we know, will fade. It will attenuate over time and distance.
It changes into heat, for example.
Yes.
You know, if you have a flashlight and you shine it, it'll be hot. You know, the sum of the light changes into heat. So that's an example of how it degrades into a different kind of energy.
And just to continue about what I observed at Conyers, Georgia, yes, mm-hmm. there was the supernatural. Perhaps we should say that this manifestation, again, within this scalar dimension, within this scalar energy paradigm, was unique. It's not something that we're used to, because we look at the world through the prism, if you will, of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Let me expand upon that. I believe healing hands are a manifestation of scalar energy. We've heard of people who have hands that they can lay upon you and impart some type of healing. Some people will even say that they feel heat.
Right,
from
that's
these
common.
Healing hands.
Right.
Exactly. That, in my estimation, is scalar energy.
Right.
That's a manifestation of scalar energy. Healing hands mm-hmm. are scalar energy hands.
And then go back to say what, let's talk a little bit about what Jesus said about laying on the hands, because now we're doing it in a different light. You know, if laying on the hands is really scalar energy, and this energy is coming from the fifth dimension, it's not inherent just in the third, it's actually coming in through a multidimensional route, Jesus was actually giving us a very, very important clue as to how we can help heal others and ourselves.
Precisely. So God, as the creator of the universe, would never contradict himself. God has imparted to his disciples this ability to heal. Healing hands. Many people have this gift of healing.
Right.
Well, it's our contention that, yes, this indeed is some type of energy. What type? It's invariably scalar energy. And scalar energy is indeed a modality that can produce healing. I work with a scalar energy instrument, and I am able to effectuate many both physical and mental improvements in people as well as animals.
Mm-hmm. And you can do this at a distance. And this is an important point. You don't have to be actually at the site where the person is.
That's correct. Scalar energy abides by a different set of laws and properties as that vis-a-vis of the electromagnetic spectrum. I have observed and I have practiced before that scalar energy can render a treatment, can broadcast energy to a person by way of their photograph.
Mm-hmm.
I simply take a photograph of a person and place it inside my scalar energy instrument. My instrument will broadcast energy to that person almost as if that person is a portable radio or a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I am able to, again, effectuate some type of an improvement in their health, both mental and physical, by way of my scalar energy instrument, by virtue of the fact that I have their photograph only.
Now, one of the things that you talk about, well, you have many different categories on your website, but let's talk about some of the specific mechanisms that scalar energy can help people. One of the mechanisms, of course, is to disintegrate or disrupt viruses, bacteria, fungi, you know, whatever, parasites, whatever is causing a problem. You want to talk a little bit about how scalar energy does that?
Sure. I understand that scalar energy has the ability to assemble and disassemble matter.
Okay.
Scalar energy is, and let me just use this and preface this remark first.
Mm-hmm.
When God said, "Let there be light," with that light, with scalar light, scalar energy, the universe assumed a shape, a geometry. Prior to that, everything was void. So scalar light, scalar energy is the instructions for the universe, for everything to assume a shape, a configuration, a pattern. Without scalar light, we would simply have chaos. So this is order out of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that notion, I have developed a scalar energy instrument that can indeed either assemble or disassemble matter. In so doing, I've developed a technique whereby I am able to disassemble pathogens, such as viruses, mm-hmm. bacteria, fungi. And the principle that I use, it's quite simple. I use the reverse phase angle on my scalar energy instrument. That is an instruction for something, matter in this case, to disassemble. And the way I impart that information, I simply take a photograph of a germ.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that, let's say it's Streptococcus, I will place that photograph of Streptococcus in my scalar energy instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And my instrument then will broadcast the reverse phase angle of Streptococcus into a person. And with that informational input, Streptococcus in somebody's body will disassemble, break apart. It's all done at the quantum level. I do all of this, again, by way of somebody's photographs. Nobody has to ever be physically present in my laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the great promise that I see with scalar energy. This is simply one application of this monumental energy that hopefully the world will soon embrace.
Now, the other thing that we need to remember is when people get sick, it's because of lowering of energy in a part of their body. For example, a lot of people are exposed to tuberculosis but don't get TB. A lot of people exposed to smallpox but didn't get smallpox. You know, a lot of people did get smallpox. But the point is that because there are no diseases 100% transmissible, except maybe Ebola, that's one that's a little bit more transmissible. But the majority of diseases do not completely have 100% transmission. So there are people who are naturally at a higher energy level and are resistant to infection and invasion. And so the other thing we need to take keep in mind is that scalar energy can actually be used through the different chakra systems to an area of low energy to raise the energy and then have the body naturally take care of the pathogens through the immune system.
I would concur. When I am working with my scalar energy instrument, I realize that, and I offer this also to the general public, I realize that scalar energy balances, harmonizes the seven chakras. Now, let me explain what a chakra is. In my estimation, and from my research and the research of others, we have seven chakras in the human body. Those are simply points of light. And in specific, it's scalar light. And sadly, Western medicine is not really attended to the fact that we have seven chakras. Those chakras, again, are scalar energy processing points. And as such, those seven chakras send out information. They instruct both the spiritual, the emotional, as well as the physical body. I have worked with my scalar energy instrument with a number of individuals, and I've been able to reverse emotional conditions such as depression, anxiety, phobias, etc. Now, I do this all by way of a photograph. How is it that I'm able to broadcast this energy thousands of miles from my laboratory to somebody that I really don't know, except by way of their photograph, and I'm able in some fashion to reverse anxiety or some type of a phobia? It's all done by this animating force. Scalar energy will correct the seven chakras. And in so doing, then the seven chakras will in some way palliate, in many cases, emotional disturbances, or again, as I mentioned, phobias, or some type of schizophrenic behavior. It's fascinating.
Well, like in schizophrenia, we are not just influenced by things in the third dimension. You know, and there's a lot of different pathogens in the third dimension that we've just spoken about. But in the case of schizophrenia and some other very interesting diseases like Morgellons, there's actually fourth dimensional intrusions into the third dimension. And the it's very important to understand that increasing the energy of the person or animal, in the case of Morgellons, but increasing the energy of the person will then help block these intrusions coming in from higher dimensions or from from the third dimension. Either way, it doesn't really matter. But we have to have a strong light body, a strong energy body, and by energy I'm talking about scalar energy, in order to resist things that are coming in from the outside. And it's not, like I said, it's not just third dimensional. There are fourth dimensional entities that may be responsible for a lot of problems.
I would agree. We have to look at the body holistically, not just from a physical standpoint, obviously
right.
from an emotional standpoint, an intellectual standpoint, and there is a spiritual component. And all of this is the fabric of man. It's as Jesus would say, we do not live by bread alone, meaning there's a higher self. There's a spiritual calling. God wants us to be intelligent, emotionally happy, emotionally satisfied. All of this, I believe, will be able to be addressed by way of scalar energy. Scalar energy will allow us to overcome physical disease as well as emotional disease.
Now, on your website, you have a very interesting section under prophecy that I want to talk about. There is a phenomenon, most of our listeners probably aren't aware of this. I am aware of this because I've studied it extensively and also historically. And it is a true phenomena where saintly people, you give some examples on your website and you actually show the bodies, after they die, their body does not degrade. And you have a name for that. Would you like to tell the audience what that is?
Incorruptibility. There are some very saintly men and women, as doctor has mentioned, that their bodies will not experience physical decay, physical decomposition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was studying Catherine Parr, the sixth wife of Henry VIII. She did not. She had that property until her body was exposed 300 years later, and it wasn't taken care of, and then it degraded. But for 300 years after her death, it might have been 50 or 100 years after her death, the body was found in a state of preservation,
yes,
which simply wasn't possible back then. They didn't have the techniques.
Of course.
Right.
So let's expand upon that. How does that happen?
Okay. Yeah, how does that happen?
my belief is, and I think I could substantiate this in many cases, when the human body is in a state of scalar energy, when the human body is immersed in a scalar energy environment, there is no decay.
Right.
Scalar energy can prevent decay, decomposition. Now, God will impart this miracle of incorruptibility to those people who led a saintly, a holy life. It's his
right.
way of singling them out and saying, this person, this woman, or this man, it was in my favor. They died in a state of grace. I will mm-hmm. herald their saintly life, and I will impart upon this dead person the gift, the miracle of incorruptibility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, God will never contradict himself, so how does he do that? God always works hand in hand with the universe he created.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's my contention that God surrounds this body with a scalar energy environment. I have witnessed this myself. I've been to France, where I saw St. Bernadette, the Lord's visionary. She is incorrupt.
Right.
Her body has not decayed. Her body is in an open-air mausoleum. You could see her clearly. Her body is incorrupt. This is the phenomenon of scalar energy.
I wonder if science has ever studied this. You know, because you could actually probably measure something around the body if you could, if you knew what you were trying to measure.
I would say so, and this would go back to our earlier discussion. Nancy Fowler, the visionary at Conyers, Georgia, she is since deceased, God rest her soul. Tests were done while Nancy Fowler was communicating, speaking with God, and it was found that she had a significant degree of electromagnetic activity, not only around her, but her brain itself exhibited this heightened state of awareness, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That's the book that my friend wrote. Dr. Raymond Sanchez wrote a book on the study of Nancy during these states. So
they can read
about it.
And again, it only stands to reason. If God is communicating to a person, to a soul, he's imparting light. He's imparting this beautiful scalar energy light. This is the state of heaven. I'm firmly convinced that heaven is an environment of unmitigated scalar energy.
That's what Dr. Sanchez thought, too.
God bless. Many people have had visions of heaven. There's splendid light.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, there are colors in heaven that we've never even imagined.
Right, that's true.
Exactly. When you go to heaven, when you're actually in this state of this perfect union with God, you're in this scalar energy environment in which it is timeless, it is eternal. Scalar energy, as we have mentioned previously, is this eternal component. And once we're in this environment of heaven, it's not only beautiful light, but it's eternity, because scalar energy itself is the carrier of time. Time is incumbent upon scalar energy.
Mm-hmm. So that is something that, anyway, I think it could be measured if these points are points where scalar energy is intact, these places where these bodies are. And then the interesting thing is with Catherine Parr, they moved the body. So the question is, when you move the body out of this place, does it then degrade? You see?
I understand. I wouldn't know the answer.
It's very interesting. Well, probably with these saints, they haven't moved the body. I would imagine if you look historically, they haven't moved it.
Yeah.
This needs to be studied. This is very interesting.
Of course, there's a corollary that I'd like to share also.
Uh-huh.
Some people have observed that when they place a food particle in a pyramid, in a pyramid-like structure.
Right.
They have observed that the food will not degrade, will not decay, at least not at the rate it would outside of a pyramid. Now,
right.
I often ponder that, and really the only immediate solution, answer to that is this. Pyramids are capacitors for scalar energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you place a person or a dead person or a food particle or some type of biological life in a pyramid, mm-hmm. it seems to slow down the aging process. It seems
right.
to prevent decay or decomposition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, with our lemma in mind, with our major premise in mind, it is presumed that a pyramid is a what? A capacitor for scalar energy. And as
mm-hmm.
such, the breakdown of matter, the decomposition, is different than that what we would experience in the normal world.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of examples of that, even to the point of razor blades staying sharp, you know, even though they're used all the time. If you put them back in the pyramid at a certain point within the pyramid, they stay sharp.
Right. Exactly.
So that would be like your theory of deconstructing matter and reconstructing it.
Yes, precisely.
Which
precisely.
Is a property of, well, you said earlier, it was a property of scalar energy.
Yes.
So that would be, I mean, razor blades obviously aren't biological, but it's an example of that. And that brings to mind, I mean, why aren't more of us sleeping in pyramids? You know, we should be. I mean, shouldn't you be sleeping, you know, your 8 hours, 6 hours a night in that point in the pyramid?
Why not? I have more than one scalar energy instrument, so
mm-hmm.
per se, I don't sleep in a pyramid, but I do treat myself extensively with scalar energy. And in many ways, I don't mean to be gauche by this, but I think I have in some way reversed my aging. I'm 53
mm-hmm.
years old. I don't feel like I'm 53. I feel very healthy. And in many ways, scalar energy has helped to rejuvenate my body.
Mm-hmm.
I've developed a technique whereby I can assemble, I can form vitamins, minerals, amino acids in my body. In so doing, I think that will abet my health, and it has significantly, both my physical and mental health. So what are we saying here? Scalar energy is, again, responsible for all matter. All matter either assembles or disassembles by way of scalar energy. And if
mm-hmm.
we wanted to create a perfect state, we would really do that by the tool of scalar energy. I could see a world in the future where if we wanted to create a certain mineral or a certain substance, we would simply assemble it by way of scalar energy. The converse of that is if we have a waste product, we simply would disassemble it by way of scalar energy. Scalar
we need to energy. Do that for nuclear waste.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I believe scalar energy can be used and eventually developed to the point we could transmute radioactive waste.
You know, there was such an instrument. There's a book called Atlantis and the Neanderthals. It's something, it might be a little bit longer than that, but it has Atlantis in it and the Neanderthals. It's actually a historical book, and they talk about the antiquity people having a laser-like instrument that would cut through granite, but yet you could put it on your hand and it wouldn't cut your hand. And you could also use it to, in fact, the Chinese are using it now because it actually was redeveloped recently. The Chinese are using it to desalt salt ocean water, and it can be used to quickly make radioactive material safe again. And it's a very interesting, it must be a scalar energy device. It has to be.
It has to be.
Doing all of those things, what I just said. In the book, they don't say it's a scalar energy device, but it has to be. I mean, it can cut a granite. They said that was the device they used to cut the granite that then they made all the monoliths with.
Sure.
And they
sure.
fit together perfectly. I mean, perfectly.
Yeah.
And we don't even have the tools today that would do that.
That's correct.
But it would have to be a scalar energy device that would do that for a perfect fit.
I agree. We look at the archaeological ruins, and we say to ourselves, many of these structures have such precision to them. And
right.
You said the cut, the actual to cut a stone and with the precision of maybe...
We can't do that now. It doesn't exist. Right.
Precisely.
Because we don't have scalar energy devices here in the U.S.
Correct.
That are, you know, for that kind of thing. The Chinese, though, do have a working model of one, evidently, according to this book. So, and they give the history of it, because I think it was a guy in Poland that reinvented it. And the short story is that the Chinese bought the technology from him, and he went over and set him up. And he was supposed to come to the U.S., and they built him a lab in the U.S., and he came into the lab, and he smoked cigars. And so he lit a cigar, and they said, no, you can't have a cigar in here. So he went back to Europe. So the U.S. never got the technology because they were being ridiculous. So anyway, that's an interesting story. But I bet it was a scalar energy device. It had to be.
It would have to be. I would concur.
Yeah.
Yeah, by all means.
So these devices were used in antiquity and rediscovered. The guy, I think, is deceased now, but was rediscovered within, I don't know, probably the 50s or 60s. This technology was available. So it can be rediscovered again. I mean, it's probably discovered but classified, I would imagine.
I would like to add to that. I believe the Ark of the Covenant that Moses and the Israelites had was
mm-hmm.
a scalar energy instrument.
There's no doubt of that. That is absolutely what that is.
Yeah, wonderful. Now, if that's true, and I would go on record by saying the Ark of the Covenant was probably the first recorded example of a scalar energy instrument.
That's
God
right.
God exalted this Ark of the Covenant. God thought mm-hmm. so highly of it. It really embodied the. It was a representation of God Himself, the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
And for God to exalt this, and King David exalted this, the
mm-hmm.
Israelites were just enthralled in love with the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Well, God is manifesting Himself, what? By way of scalar energy. The Ark of
right.
the Covenant was an instrument that propagated, that emanated scalar energy. This,
right.
this really should serve as a clue how much God favors scalar energy and how much He really wants
mm-hmm.
to impart this energy upon mankind. Mankind must now embrace scalar energy.
And there's another thing that we learn from the Ark of the Covenant that we need to keep in mind. The Ark of the Covenant could actually be used as a weapon, because the energy coming out of it, if you were not, of God, if you were not a pure of heart and a holy man or a holy woman, this energy would kill you. That's the other thing.
That's correct.
You know, this energy was at such a degree that people could not get exposed to this energy without, they would fall dead, is what the reports of it said. So, but yet the holy men could go in. They went in once a year to the Temple of Solomon, where the Ark was, and they would survive just fine. So the point is that if we're really coming up on an ascension event where this energy, this scalar energy, is going to be more prevalent, that people who are not living according to the principles are going to be in trouble. And that's it's all consistent with what we see in the Ark of the Covenant and what we see in other examples of scalar energy becoming manifest, you know, within the third dimension.
I agree. By all means. I believe scalar energy is a direct manifestation of God. How does God express Himself? By light.
Light,
God,
exactly.
God is purity. God is an essence beyond our understanding. And the way God wants to manifest Himself is by pure light. And that pure light is scalar energy, scalar light. And I would go so far as to say when saints or holy men and women even have visions, or God speaks to them, these visions are by way of scalar light. We hear of
mm-hmm.
apparitions in the Bible, Those are all manifestations of scalar light. When God speaks to us, some people have a locution, which is an inner voice that God will speak. That is a manifestation. Mm-hmm. God communicates by way of scalar energy. That locution, that inner voice, is effectuated by, indeed, the scalar energy spectrum.
And then when the saints and Jesus and other holy people have this light around them, that's because people actually, that are looking at them actually see this light, that is an emanation of this energy through their field.
We remember that Jesus on Mount Tabor just had an effulgence of light about him. And Peter, James, and John were witnesses to that. Well, that was a manifestation of scalar light, of scalar energy, and they were enthralled. It was just a spectacular demonstration of God's love and mercy. All of that is by way of scalar light. I contend that was not electricity. That was
scalar light, yeah. And then the other thing we learned from the Bible is that Jesus could heal with a field effect. In other words, somebody could come up behind Jesus and touch his clothing and be healed. And Jesus might not even know he was back there. You know, it's a field of healing energy that is around these people that have this light.
I once had a mystic who gave me a number of messages from Jesus and Mary regarding scalar energy research. So I've been, if you will, instructed by Jesus and his mother as to how to conduct my scalar energy research. And one of the instructions that Jesus gave me was that when the woman who had a hemorrhage touched the cloak of Jesus, Jesus said, "Who has touched me? Power has gone out of me."
Right.
And that power instantly healed that woman of a hemorrhage.
Right.
That power was scalar power.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the lessons that Jesus gave me 20, 25 years ago regarding scalar energy. I've never forgot it.
Yeah, I have an interesting story. The AJC was doing a story on healing, spiritual healing here, and I was doing the healing on one of my patients. And the so we were in the healing room, and I was just doing the the laying on the hands thing with the, which is scalar energy, like we said. And the photographer came in to take pictures of what we were doing, and then he came in and he was there for about 5 minutes, and he goes, "Oh my God," he says, "I've had a migraine for 3 days, and now it's gone." And I said, "Well, you're in the healing room, and the healing is a field effect. So anybody who comes into the field should get healed."
Precisely.
Yes, I didn't even know he had a migraine.
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yes,
it's a
field, as you said.
It's a field effect. Yes. And a field effect would be consistent with it being scalar energy, because energy creates field effects, does it not? I mean,
yes,
if you put your hand in an electromagnetic field, don't you feel it? Yes, you do.
Of course.
Not such a good idea sometimes. So that's why I believe it. I mean, I believe from what I learned from Peter Kelly, from Tom Bearden, from the Scientific America article, from your work, from the stuff in the Bible, the descriptions, scalar energy is the energy coming in from the fifth dimension, which is, in terms of what we can see with our organs of perception, the best manifestation of God that we know of. This is the only manifestation of God that we can actually experience in the third dimension, is this light that came through Mary and Conyers and through different artifacts that are holy artifacts, and the light that people see when they see visions, and the light that you're talking about, that you experience. These are all field effects of scalar energy.
Yes, thank you. I agree. Wonderful. Boy, what a compendium of information this is.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's important to understand things from a scientific standpoint and from a spiritual standpoint.
Yeah.
And I've always been thought of myself as a spiritual scientist, so I want to combine the two worlds and show people they're not different. It's just that back in Jesus' time, they didn't have the physics explanations that we have now. you know, that things were different. And they might have, I think Jesus understood things even beyond what our scientists understand because of the grace that was given him as to who he was. But he couldn't necessarily explain it in anything other than parables and, you know, things that were more appropriate for what was going on then. And it was quite a dark time that he lived in. It was not a time of enlightenment. So he had to explain it in ways that, you know, that were appropriate for the time. And that's why we, you know, we don't have the, I mean, now Jesus could probably explain it in much more precise scientific terms for us.
God is the author of science, and there is no contradiction between religion and science.
Right.
God would not ever contradict himself. It's man's perception of what is real. That's where the contradictions come in, or the prejudice that we might hold. I try and approach my research as well as my worship of God in a very open, almost childlike fashion, and I want to be accepting for every new discovery. I don't want to preconceive that
that's
that
important.
I know that I don't want my prejudice to in any way occasion some type of a mistake in either my worship or in my scientific inquiry. I want to be open-minded, and I want the evidence to present itself, and then I will accept that.
And the other thing, I touched on this earlier, but I think people really have to understand that different people have different levels of organs of perception. You know, there's some people who are born with spiritual sight and hearing, and there are some people who get spiritual sight and hearing through spiritual practices. And for people who don't have spiritual sight and hearing, they can't conceive of what this is because their organs of perception are not operating at the same level. You can think that a dog can hear much better than we can hear. And there's all sorts of radio waves and TV signals and cell phone signals and everything all around us all the time, but we are not aware of them. Basically, as you do more spiritual practices, as you purify your life and live according to the principles that Jesus and other masters taught, you will naturally increase your organs of perception to a higher level. And when you do this, you begin to see that the world is not what you thought it was. I mean, when there's light around something, then you pay attention to it. When things are very, very dark, you would go away from that. You know, if you're presented with someone and you have a very, very bad feeling about them, then that's your own internal guidance system telling you to go the other way. Don't engage with them or go into business with them or marry them. So, you know, we have all of these things that are here to protect us, and it's through spiritual practices that you can get better and better at discernment.
Yes. Well spoken. Well spoken. We've heard Jesus has said, be as meek as doves and wise, and to be able to penetrate, wise as serpents, to be able to understand what and discern between what is true, what is false, mm-hmm. obviously. But there is spiritual good in this world, and sadly, there is evil. So we have to make that distinction. And those of us who have developed the spiritual side, we see that. We can see this spiritual realm. Some people, they simply discount God. They simply discount the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, they haven't developed that, or they don't have the grace yet to see that spiritual
side. That's true. So we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information once again and then talk about some of the various things that you've seen Scalar Energy heal in terms of, your own experience?
Sure. Again, my website is www.selfhealgo.com. And to speak about Scalar Energy and its promise for mankind, I probably would like to conclude and speak about what I have observed with the seven chakras.
Mm-hmm.
Scalar energy, I believe, is responsible for so many of our biological processes. And not only that, but our spiritual sense our spiritual state, our emotional state, our mental state. Now, it's come to my attention that everybody obviously has a soul, the human soul. Well, how does the soul operate? The soul is scalar energy. Everybody has an eternal soul. And if we really have this eternal connection with God, it has to be some type of light. And the only light that is eternal is scalar energy. So scalar energy is the very essence of our spiritual state. Every human being has a soul, and that soul is filled with scalar light. And mm-hmm. if we act in harmony with our soul, we can live a very grace-filled, happy, productive life. This is how important I believe scalar energy is, not only to our spiritual state, but again, yes, I can break apart germs with scalar energy. Yes, scalar energy can be used to cut stone. There's so many applications with scalar energy. But the main crux that I'm trying to bring out in this immediate conversation is our soul is scalar light, scalar energy. This is how much God favors this light. He has given us this eternal imprint, if you will, and it's all done by way of scalar power, scalar light.
So what do you think is going to happen in the next few years in terms of the presence of this light coming into the third dimension?
I would say that if mankind were to embrace scalar energy and incorporate it, it would catapult us into the future. It would improve everybody's lifestyle exceptionally. Scalar energy will have a greater effect than what electricity had upon mankind. Scalar energy is much more versatile. It's essentially a relatively inexpensive and superabundant energy. With scalar energy, we should be able to end the energy crisis in a rather consummate fashion.
Well, I think there's another thing to consider, though. Paul Lafayette, the physicist, has evidence of a super wave of energy coming from the galactic center through the sun, affecting now the solar system, and it may be actually the cause of global warming that we see, and affecting speciation, affecting a lot of different things in a way that is perhaps going to culminate in the various prophecies that were given, you know, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and even Hopi and other indigenous prophecies are all talking about a time when the earth changes into a very different place.
I would consider that not only an ongoing phenomenon, scalar, we're immersed in the sea of scalar energy, but mm-hmm. if indeed we had more of this information, more of this energy coming from the stars as well as our sun, that's going to change the topography of the earth, that will change the climate of the earth, and that will also have an effect on the way we think. And the way we act.
I think it's going to be a profound change. I mean, right. not just I mean, well, the prophecies have talked about it for I mean, all the prophecies are talking about the same thing. And I like to look at different sources not connected to one another, you know, at least in terms of space-time, talking about the same phenomena, I think we need to pay attention to it.
Yes, yes. I'm able to take a light bulb and illuminate it next to my scalar energy instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I can do that with a light bulb locally, imagine what we could do eventually with scalar energy to broadcast energy, to illuminate objects, and to, if you will, replace so many of the old and outdated forms of power generation. That's one of the applications.
Yeah, I think that Tesla was working with that kind of light, wasn't he?
Yes.
That was what he was experimenting with.
Yeah, the latter part of his life, he essentially abandoned his research with electricity because he discovered that scalar energy was so much superior mm-hmm. to that of AC electricity. Not that you want to discount it entirely, but But he realized the great promise, and he knew that eventually the world would embrace scalar energy, and we would have this very efficient, very relatively inexpensive, infinite source of energy.
Tesla was photographed, and there were reports of him having an energy device that would, powered by scalar energy, that it was a platform, kind of like a treadmill type thing that he would go scooting across the fields on. In other words, it was powered by scalar energy, but it was a early flying machine, flying a few feet above the ground.
I would believe so. Scalar energy is the cause of gravity.
Right. So basically he had a machine that did the anti-gravity. He figured it out. Which, I mean, if you look at Tom Bearden's work, it's not that hard. I mean, you can really understand the mathematics of it pretty simply.
Correct.
Was electrogravity would counter gravity.
Precisely. And it has been done before. And Tesla, I believe, probably did invent such an instrument. Where it is today, has somebody seized that instrument? I don't know.
Oh, it was seized. All the stuff was seized.
Yeah.
By the government. That's right. See, I believe all this technology does exist. There's patents for it, certainly, but yet it's buried because of the overall opinion that this technology needs to be regulated very carefully.
Yes.
And perhaps it's true. Perhaps it's true that at a grand scale, not what you're doing, but a grand scale where you're trying to power cities and countries. It can't be used indiscriminately because of the delta time issue that we talked about earlier. In other words, indiscriminate use of scalar energy without correct, boundaries could possibly speed up the demise of our sun. So that would be something that, expenditures of it. So,
speak about the time aspect of scalar energy, if you will, scalar energy again is a double helix, and by this rotation of scalar energy at a consistent degree, we have time as we realize.
Right.
Well, if you were to reverse a scalar energy wave, if you were to go in the opposite direction with that scalar wave, you would go back in time. Scalar energy is indeed the
cause of time.
That's
in Bearden's work, too. Right, right.
So profound.
It is very profound. Well, Tom, we've reached the end of our hour. I want to thank you very much for joining us. It's been a delightful discussion of scalar energy. Please visit Tom's website. He has scalar energy sessions for sale there. And we appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year. Next week, we have Joyce Kovelman back. Dr. Kovelman is a microbiologist who's written an interesting fiction book, Crimes Against Humanity. We'll be talking about that and its implications for biological warfare today. And then on the 25th, we have Timothy Wiley, Revolt of the Rebel Angels, The Future of the Multiverse. Now, that's a book that you can really understand some of the things we've been talking about today. And then we have Susan Shumsky, The Power of Auras, Tap into Your Energy Field, on the 1st of February. This has been Dr. Susan Cobb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.